Good Saturday morning to you. Unlike the previous eight, it's not sunny today. Matt Harkins is behind the glass taking your calls at 412-928-9370. You can hit me up on Twitter at KDPomp. Yeah, it's kind of a murky kind of day, and I guess this is what we're in for now for the next who knows how long, Matt. We're going to pay the price. Everyone knew we were going to pay the price, so we're paying the price, right?
Exactly. I mean, I could do it without the rain, though.
Yeah, it's annoying, but it is what it is. And hey, we have a big day planned for you here today. Got 2 hours here at 412-928-9370. That's 412-928-9370. Also, after that, we're going to do a Pitt Panther preview show. Doran Dickerson and I, as Pitt gets ready for their final two games after three straight losses. And man, they want to reverse this a little bit here because going 7-0 maybe heightened the expectation meter, and they haven't lived up to it. Now they're 7-3 facing a team like Louisville, which had a crushing loss last week as well. We'll get into that at 1 o'clock until 2 o'clock. And over on KDK Plus today, we have quadruple header of WPIL championship games. The first one is underway. It's Matt Sieg, the Penn State commitment. He is going to go to Penn State, but right now he'd like to win a championship, and they're taking on Clairton. Fort Cherry is the number one seed, Clairton number two. After that, it's Seton LaSalle against South Park, another 1-2 matchup, and then Central Valley Avonworth, a 2-5 matchup in that one. And then later tonight at 8 p.m., all on KDKA+, it's Pine Richland and the Peters Township Indians. So that's going to be a full day of football. You can watch it all on KDKA+, and I'll be doing the late game with Arthur Motes on that one. So we'll have a lot of stuff going on here. The Fort Cherry-Clairton game is underway, and it's scoreless early on. 412-928-9370. We have a lot to get into, like the Steelers. So I ask you today, after what you watched Thursday night, what is the Steelers' ceiling at this point? You might remember 2020 when 11-0 was followed by a collapse. You know, you can make conclusions, and I just mentioned Pitt. They start 7-0, and I think people raise the expectation bar quite high, and you can't reach it. So at 8-3, what do you think the Steelers are in for down the stretch here following a 24-19 loss at the hands of the Cleveland Browns? And that game was weird in so many ways. It really was. The Browns, I could throw statistics at you that make you think that they would have lost this game by 40 points. 1-for-10 on third down. You know, they didn't get much of a run game going at all, except on fourth down. That's when they won this game. That was the difference. If you're going to look at it, the Steelers were 1-for-3 on fourth down, and Cleveland was 4-for-4 on fourth down. There are a lot of decisions to break down. Number one, Russell Wilson takes a sack on a 3rd-and-3 at the Cleveland 32. He loses 9 yards, which forced Chris Boswell to take 58 yards on the field goal attempt. In those conditions, the wind was blowing hard. Not yet snow on the field, but still, he missed it wide right. I, at the time, thought they were going to punt the ball and just, you know, let the defense go to work. Nothing against Chris Boswell. He could hit 58 yards, but those wind conditions made it very difficult. So that was one of them. I thought it was a interesting use of Justin Fields. Some may say it was just confusing at times. He was in there a lot, but a couple of times they were rushed 4th-and-2 from the Cleveland 38, and he loses 2 yards on a 4th-and-1. It seems like they were just not in sync whatsoever. Maybe that's because it was a short week, and Justin Fields hasn't done all that much, you know, in that role leading up to this. Was that the right time to implement it after just one practice, and all of a sudden he's in there quite a bit? Now, he did have a 30-yard run to the outside, but outside of that, there wasn't much there for Justin Fields. Steelers win the turnover battle 3-1. When they do that, they normally win. But it was Thursday night, and you know what happens on Thursday night. I should have known, but I thought really the Steelers are going to buck the trend here, given how bad Cleveland had been there. I looked at the last three games. Cleveland was just atrocious, especially against New Orleans. They have nothing to play for but pride, and the pride was what they utilized and the motivation to beat the Steelers. The Steelers are 1-9 on the last 10 Thursday night games, and there is your problem right there, 1-for-9. And you can try to analyze that as best you can. What does that mean? Very short time to implement anything. You know, strategy becomes more of a thing than conditioning, I think, at that point. You got to do the right things and make the right calls, and there were blown timeouts there that I thought were bad. There was that the one that really stands out was, of course, at the end of the first half, they left one in their pocket. They could have used one. They ran 40 seconds off the clock. But also, on the one play that looked like intentional grounding, where they called illegal touching instead, should have been 4th-and-1, loss of a down, move back. Instead, it turned out to be a choice between 3rd-and-7 and 4th-and-2. In my mind, I thought Cleveland was going to kick a field goal, or at least try to. It was a 43-yard attempt that would have taken the lead. I would have preferred that if I were Mike Tomlin. The reason I say that is because I think you had plenty of time left to go down the field and get a game-winning field goal from Chris Boswell, if at all possible, as opposed to giving them two downs. You know, they got two downs, third and seven, and then a fourth down if necessary. Well, they wasted no time in converting that and extending that drive. So there were a lot of things going on in that game. Another one that kind of shocked me was the fact that Cleveland came into that game with an NFL worst 46 sacks. A new left tackle essentially had no experience there. And the Steelers, which rely on pressure and sacks, only got one sack in that game, none for T.J. Watt. The only one was Nick Herbert coming around the edge and getting a strip sack. So, very strange game indeed. Myles Garrett got the better of Watt in the one-on-one comparison, even though they don't play against one another. But five tackles, three sacks, a forced fumble. And then afterwards, George Pickens picks a bad time to call the Browns a bad football team. I'm not a fan of that. I just don't think it's necessary. Now, if you back it up, you better back it up. Because the next time they play in 2 weeks, they're going to remember that one. And the last Hail Mary is another one. That play to me, you know, let me read this to you because I got this a lot. Why was there no interference on this? Says Doug in, I think he's in from La Trobe on Twitter. Doug says, why no interference on that play? Well, if you watch that, first of all, Doug, I will tell you this. You can hit me up on Twitter at KD Pomp. You're not going to get interference calls on Hail Marys. You just don't. I don't even know when the last time I saw one. Number two, if you break down, everyone's upset about George Pickens and Newsom going at it. If you break it down and look at all the video angles that you could possibly get from people who were there, it looked like George Pickens had the guy by the head and was going to take him off into the stands. People thought it was the other way around. A lot of contact on Hail Marys. I never expect to see a flag just because there never has been one. And I don't think in a desperation, that, you know, officials know what this is. Unless it's completely egregious, you're never going to get that call. 412-928-9370. Let's get to the lines. We got people want to talk. So much to talk about, so little time. We'll begin with Phil in Elizabeth, who joins us right now. Hello, Phil. How are you?
Hey, good, Bob. Hey, I'm doing good, Bob. I was talking to my friends, and they agreed with me. Do you think when we play them back in December, meaning the Browns, do you think Mike Tomlin and his whole team are going to say, it's revenge time now? You know what? We know what to look out for and what not to do. And hopefully it won't be snowing. And T.J. Watt will say, okay, it's revenge time now, Myles Garrett. And I really do think, with it being a Sunday and a 1 o'clock game, I really truly believe that we will defeat the Browns in December.
Well, Phil, I think the next time they meet, there's going to be it's a different scenario. They're coming here. I think the Steelers will be highly motivated. They can't afford another loss to them. I would expect a big line, and I would expect the Steelers to cover that line. Now, I thought they were going to win that game the other night pretty easily because of the way Cleveland had played and all the statistical data you could dig up on that game, knowing that the Steelers were 8-2, had a chance really to give themselves some extra breathing room over the Baltimore Ravens. Everything that was at stake there. And they just came out and kind of laid a dud in that game, and I was surprised by it. It will not happen again. I think the game in Cincinnati is a tough game coming up. That's for sure. And Cincinnati is a desperate team. They're 4-7. They may have already sealed their fate. However, you never know. They're capable of winning. Joe Burrow's had a tremendous start to his season despite their 4-6 record. Is it 4-6 or 4-7? I think they're 4-6. Maybe they're 4-7. I don't. Anyway, they, 27 touchdown passes, just 4 interceptions, and yet they are where they are because their defense is no good. But I thought the same of the Baltimore defense. It wasn't as good as it, you know, as it's been in the past, and yet the Steelers couldn't score a touchdown against them. So there are a lot of questions here. The one thing I'll say about the AFC, unlike in previous years, when I thought Kansas City was by far the best team and Buffalo was next, both those teams are still there, but it is a quagmire of teams. It's not the same. It's available. So the Steelers, by virtue of being in the AFC, have a chance still, despite that loss. They got to take care of business coming up in a grueling schedule. There's no question about that. 412-928-9370 out to Jay in the north side. Hey, Jay, how are you today?
Pump, how you doing? Love good. Your show.
Appreciate it.
I think you need about a 12-hour show to cover all the things people want to talk about. But the thing that it's bothered me in the past, their alignment when they have short yardage situations, third and two, even fourth and one, their halfback is like 7 yards back. And when they hand it off to him, he's got to run 7 yards plus get an additional yard or two. I just don't like that alignment. I don't see other teams use that as much.
I also didn't like on fourth and two when Justin Fields was in the game that he's in shotgun. Now, it was slippery conditions to begin with. They were rushed. The clock was going down. I would rather have the potential lure of a quarterback sneak as part of it. You're not going to get that in a shotgun, you know? So, I don't know. There were just a lot of things. You're right. You need more time than just a few hours to talk about it.
Yeah, we don't have enough time on Saturday morning.
Yeah. Anything else, Jay?
No, that's it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. 412-928-9037. Let's try Bob in Mount Lebanon, who joins us right now on the Fan Hotline. Hey, Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hey to you, Bob.
What's up?
Like to vent a little bit about the Pitt football program and Pat Narduzzi. You know, Narduzzi's legacy at Pitt, ever since he's been there, is lack of discipline and stupid penalties. Year in, year out, they lead the ACC in penalties. The man has had 2 good years in 10 years, okay? Mm-hmm. They're going to lose to Louisville today and probably go to another weed whacker bowl. That's his legacy. I hope the new AD, Ellen Green, takes a look at this Pitt football program, because if you like going to weed whacker bowls, then Narduzzi's your man. What do you think, Bob?
Well, I think you're right about discipline. And the thing is, he's a defensive-minded coach, and yet their defense at critical times gets shredded. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. And they haven't been able to come up with a consistent flow of offensive talent. Now, you can tell me that Eli Holstein is going to be fine, and that may be true. But a program of that nature needs a really good quarterback. And they've had Kenny Pickett during his time here, but that's pretty much about it other than some other transfers. But I'm talking about a big-time quarterback recruit who can make something happen there. They haven't had that. But I also think, to your point, penalties kill them. And they I don't know how many they had in their last game, but it had to be double digits. So those are things that are the hallmark of a program that needs to be better in those situations. And that's one of the reasons why 7-3 is where they are after 7-0. And that 7-0 was fool's gold, as it turned out. I talked about 11-0 Steelers in 2020. Well, 7-0 provided an unreal expectation of what Pitt really is. And I think today you're right. They're underdogs by 7.5 points. They may cover that, but I don't expect that they win that game. We'll see. If they lose it, they have BC. They could be 7-5 and fall into a number of years that Pitt football has just been 6-6 and 7-5. And I didn't think that was going to happen this year, given their start. 412-928-9370. We got more on the way. We'll take a break. Again, coming up, your thoughts about the Pittsburgh Steelers. What is their ceiling? I also would like to talk about Sidney Crosby and the Penguins. Crosby was fighting Kyle Connor last night. Should he be the guy to do that? Why is he the one doing that, and why is no one else stepping up for him? The fate of the Penguins, who fall again to Winnipeg last night. They got Utah in town tonight. We'll get into that. And Bryson DeChambeau. Have you been watching this, Matt Harkins, this Bryson DeChambeau thing? Okay, so he's a member of the LIV Golf Tour. He's trying to hit. He has a glass house in Dallas. It's a big glass house. And he's really good at this stuff on social media. He wants to hit a hole-in-one from like 120 yards over his house. So he has a mat. And he has a green over the house. And so every day that he does it, he gets a number of shots according to the day. So on day one, he got 1 shot, didn't do it. All really good shots. Day two, he got 2. Day three, 3. Day four, he's up to day 11. He had 11 shots yesterday. He put 5 of them within 3 feet, but he couldn't make a hole in one. So he's going to go on again today and do it. We've had people try this on their own who are not good golfers. Break windows. Their wives are furious. What are they doing?
I'm not trying that. I just bought a house. I'm not trying that, the new house. No.
I was going to until my wife got the better of me and said, no, you won't. She didn't even see my golf game. I'm pretty good with a wedge, but apparently not that good. 412-928-9370 is the number. This is the Bob Pompeiani Show. We continue live right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.